Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Marcus Brunzi here. Before we start today's podcast, I'd just like to let you know that you can vote for us in the Listener's Choice Awards at this year's British Podcast Awards 2019. If you'd like to vote for us, it only takes a minute of your time. Head to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. That's britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Type in How to Kill an Hour and then yeah, you'll have voted for us. It only takes a minute of your time and we'd really appreciate it. We'll also put a link in the show's description. Thank you very much in advance. And hey, here's hoping we win. Anyway, over to the podcast.
Are you serious?
Hello, welcome to How to Kill an Hour. My name is Marcus Brunzi. There's plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Right now, you're going to kill some time with us. I'm about to introduce a fabulous guest who covers lots of very interesting things, so I can't wait to get stuck into that. But first things first, I want to let you know that we've got a giveaway. We're giving away a copy of The Division 2. It's a game that one of our hosts, Funk Butcher, really, really loves. He's actually playing it as we speak right now. That's why he's not here on today's show. So we're going to get his full review for that in the next show. But what we want to do is we want to make sure that one of you is able to get your hands on it. So if you head to howtokillanhour.com/win, we've got a link in the show description as well for you. You can enter and win yourself a copy of The Division 2, whatever console you have. And also, before we crack on with today's show, I've been killing time with the Scream Go Hero app, right? It's an app that you've probably seen all over social media where people are shouting at their phone at different volumes to control the character in the game, basically. So check that out. But anyway, without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest, Alexis Conran. Nice to meet you, mate.
Hello, mate. Nice
Thanks
to
for
meet
coming
you.
On the show.
I want to hear more about the screen. I want to see someone play that on the quiet carriage on the train.
Do you know what's wicked? The people are choosing well different things to like a vast range of things to shout. And one of my favourites is this Instagrammer called Frimpon, and he's a real avid football fan. He's an Arsenal supporter, and that day he wasn't really feeling Chelsea, so he was just going fuck Chelsea. he did alright. I didn't ask you what team you support, by the way.
Oh god, you don't want to know.
Yeah,
actually it's out there, people know. I'm a huge Manchester United supporter.
Oh, you're a Man U supporter?
Yeah.
That's interesting times for you.
Well, that's a short podcast. I'll just get my coat.
How are you feeling as a Man United supporter at the moment?
I am absolutely loving it right now.
Yeah,
I know it's a cliche, but it feels like we got our club back. I never liked Mourinho. Sorry, there. I'll put it out there.
It's interesting though, because statistically, he did.
He did really well. Yeah, he won the Europa League. No one ever won it before. You know, but it was the attitude. It was the grumbling. It was the fact that he never played United football. It was the fact that all the post-match interviews were just abysmal, in the sense that we were great. Somebody else was to blame. And, you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I mean, he is Manchester United. So, you know what? I'd rather see them play like that and we finish fourth, fifth or whatever than go through the whole Jose Mourinho power trip, which is, it's all about him. So, good riddance.
I think it's a good testament to show you like how heart can really change the way a team plays as well. Because I feel like personality and heart, like even though Mourinho, like I just said, he's statistically amazing. Sometimes he just sounds like a cold bastard. Like sometimes he talks, I'm like, you sound so evil, bruv. Like you have no, I don't feel like you've come away from the game learning stuff.
Well, he sounded, in my radio work, I do a lot of talking to politicians and he sounded like a politician. You know, and that's I don't think club managers just sound like politicians.
No,
I think, you know, we've got enough of politicians in our lives. I think football managers should should say it like it is.
Yeah, we'll get onto that in a moment, by the way.
Oh, good. Okay.
How do you like to kill time, or how have you been killing time recently then?
Do you know what? I am a man full of hobbies.
Yeah.
I have a lot of hobbies, a lot of things that I like to do, and I'm going to disappoint you because none of them involve tech.
Go on, mate.
Although some of them sort of do, because you always have an app or you've got to go online for something. Yeah. But my first hobby, which kind of really saw where I am today, because where I am today is mostly due to a show that I used to do on the BBC called The Real Hustle.
Really? What's that?
What's that about?
Real Hustle? Yeah, go on.
And I only really ended up doing The Real Hustle because I was doing magic, as in sleight of hand magic. And that was sort of my first proper, full, all-consuming hobby, you know. When I say all-consuming, I remember once when I first got into it, I was about 2 months into it, I bought a book, big book, like 150 pages of magic tricks, big diagrams and everything, written in the 50s.
Yeah.
Difficult to penetrate. And I remember I woke up, didn't have a job at the time, quite clear to say. I was a jobbing actor with no job. I opened the book and I got my pack of cards, and all I remember was it was morning. And the next thing I remember is I couldn't quite see the book quite clearly. And I was thinking, what's going on? Why is my eyes? It was evening. I just sat there for an entire day, not moving. This was pre-mobile phones. This was pre-everything sort of modern. But I became obsessed with magic. And then that sort of led through to The Real Hustle. And of course, it sort of paid off. But so I'm a man of, so how do you kill an hour? I'll learn a magic trick, or I'll practice magic. I also do other geeky stuff like archery and things like that.
Okay, cool. So, like, get onto the archery. I like to say that. But so with magic, is it like something that you always have to keep practicing and learning and staying sharp with? It's not something you can be like, completed that, come back to that in a few years.
Yeah, no. I cannot tell you how difficult it is for me to sit here with you now chatting without a pack of cards in my hands.
Have you got a pack of cards on you?
I should do. I always do.
I mean, if you want to hold them while we talk, that's cool. But so you're used to just sitting there and kind of fondling a pack of cards. Fresh pack.
Well,
Bicycle playing cards.
Bicycle playing cards. So
are they like the standard?
They are.
All right. You hear the shuffling going on right there.
That is the sound of my life, right? I talked to my agent on the phone. I was speaking to her this week, and she's like, do you know what? I've known you all these years. Thank God I know that sound is cards, because it sounds like something else.
Sounds like you're taking a shit.
Yeah, exactly. It just sounds like... Whatever I do, if I'm writing stuff, when I'm on the radio, I mean, I don't shuffle when I'm on the radio, but I've got them in my hands, and I'm sort of doing this, which is sort of just fiddling with them. But it's a thing that it's a habit. You know, I don't smoke. I don't have any of those other habits where I kind of need to do something. And I tell you what, I'd rather be doing this than being on my phone.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm scared of my phone now. I know we're going to come on and talk about this.
Yeah.
My phone owns me.
Okay, so you're aware of how addictive phones are.
Oh, mate. I have seen the change in me as a person, as my character, manifest itself hugely in the advent of phones and Twitter. I mean, look, especially at the moment, I mean, those of you who know me or, you know what I do, amongst all my TV stuff, I do radio, and I'm in radio at the moment. Unless you're talking about Brexit, you might as well not be on radio. Yeah. When I say, not music radio, obviously, but talk radio. And so you've got to keep abreast of it. So in a sense, part of it is because I need to know what's happening. And at the moment with politics, an hour changes everything. So you find yourself on it the whole time. But I realize how much I'm on it when I don't need to be, because I'm just used to being there. So having a pack of cards is often what I use to just try and sort of move away from being on the phone. And don't forget, I'm not a spring chicken. I'm like, I'm 47, so I've missed the sort of, I'm not the Snapchat generation or the Instagram generation where I need to do everything on there. But I think Twitter, for me, because of that overload of information, has really made a difference. But the negatives of that have been that my attention span's virtually zero. if you can't say it in 240 characters, I find it difficult to read a long form article. I have to force myself.
Yeah, and I sitting there and not doing anything used to be a thing.
I know, like,
people
and
used
it's
to
a
sit
good
on the
thing.
Train and they might read a book or they might just look out the window. I remember being on the train with my granddad and I watched him in amazement for half an hour. Probably longer, but after half an hour I started doing something else. Yeah. Seeing them, watching him just look out the window.
Look out the window.
What are you doing, granddad? Just taking in the view.
And wow. You know what? It's important. I'm going back to doing that. I'm going because I do a lot of traveling filming.
Yeah.
And I love podcasts. I love just sort of listening. I either listen to the radio room, and I'm forcing myself not to do that and actually look out the freaking window.
Yeah.
Because that's when you're going to get an idea.
Yeah.
That's when you're going to get creative. That's when you're going to go, oh, you know, that's when you're going to have to start having thoughts. Of your own. I do feel a little bit worried that I have difficulties about being alone with my own thoughts. You know, there's a constant input. Is it a podcast? Is it the radio? You're watching telly? You're reading something online? You've got scrolling through Twitter? When are you just alone?
Yeah. Yeah, a very good friend of mine, he's actually a friend of the show called Mr. Midas. He does a show called Games, Gadgets and Rhymes on YouTube. He said to me, when did you last take a holiday? I was like, well, I don't know. Last year at some point. He's like, when did you last take a couple of days off? I was like, well, I don't know. Can't remember. He's like, when did you last have some time to kind of manifest an idea? And I was like, shit, that's what you're actually trying to say is be still and let, you know.
Let things flow, let things happen. You know, I've got a lot of writer friends of mine and, you know, the thing they have all in common is none of them are on Twitter, none of them are on Instagram because they're like, if I start that, then my time, I need time to do nothing in order to get the right ideas. And, you know, for us, for you and I, self-employed people who sort of, you know, we're reliant on our ideas. You know, I've got an idea for a great new TV show. I've got an idea for a great new podcast or something. And we need to keep that flowing. We need to keep that creativity flowing. And I think social media and, you know, the whole online presence, although it's absolutely vital in researching your ideas and getting new ideas and being influenced by stuff, by being exposed to more things than you ever would be before, it's kind of a double-edged sword because on the other hand, it could sap your creativity hugely just by just sucking you in.
Yeah, and you can never stop. It's that infinity scroll that everything has now, right?
Wasn't that fascinating with the guy who came, who did that interview, who said he invented the infinity scroll, and he kind of feels guilty about it now.
Yeah, but it's genius.
It is genius.
It's that thing. It's like there's nothing to say, oh, well, I'm at the end now. And it's really interesting. A lot of comedians that have content that they put online found that it's really interesting psychologically, instead of putting like an hour special up, they could put up little clips and they find people would consume more of their comedy when it's cut into little clips. Same out, or the same show basically, as opposed to when it's put online. There's something about us just having those little snack-sized portions of content.
It's getting into politics. Yeah. This is the thing that people don't realise. It's getting into our politics. So when you've got Prime Minister's Question Time, right, which, come on, let's be honest, who gives a shit? No one, I do, because I'm, you know, there's something wrong with me. But most of the general public don't really care, right? But what's happening now is Prime Minister's Question Time is being used by both sides, but particularly by the Labour side, who seem to be a little bit more clued up on tech and how to use it, and especially Twitter and Instagram. It's become, instead of actually trying to dig into the Prime Minister or the opposition or whatever, it's become an opportunity for people to stand up and deliver that 15 seconds of clip that then will go onto social media. So it's you know, the idea of what you just said, you know, let's break stuff down. We are now becoming trained into ingesting information only in bite-sized chunks. And I'm not quite sure that is the correct way to go. I may be wrong. I may be sounding like a granddad, but my instinct tells me that I'm not sure that that's the way to go.
For entertainment purposes, I love checking out funny little videos. I love 30 little videos. I don't know. Cat and a dog play fight.
Panda videos. Come on.
Stuff
who
like
doesn't
that.
Like a good panda video?
Of course. Stuff like that. Or, you know, someone remixing Kanye West playing a piano with a choir and putting Postman Pat or Thomas the Tank Engine music over it all day long. Love that. So for that kind of consumption, great. But I think you're right in saying it's a double-edged sword, and it's only going to become something that is going to morph and change at a rate and in a way that I don't think we can presume, because a conversation that we talk about quite a bit at the moment is 5G and how that's going to change things. A lot of people are like, 5G, so what? Faster internet. But I'm like, hang on. Before 3G and 4G, there was no Spotify, there was no Instagram, there was no infinity scroll because you just couldn't do it on your phone. So it's going to be interesting when that shift comes and we can really pull down large amounts of data on our phone. I don't know, maybe we'll be watching bigger bits of longer form content because we can access it really, really quickly. Or maybe not. Who knows? Who knows what we'll be getting?
I'm with you. My worry is that I think it's done now. We've moved towards everything has to be simple and short.
Right. So you reckon shorter the better?
Yeah, what it's going to be like. Now, look, there's some people who will say, well, look, there's a merit to that. You know, in the jobs that we're in, right, when you have to come up with ideas and pitch a show, you've been there, I've been there. You know, if you can't do it in a sentence, something's not quite right. Mm. Now, that idea existed, you know, there's the elevator pitches, they used to call it. If you can't pitch your show and the time it takes you to go from one floor to another, then you haven't got a show. So that idea existed way before tech came along. So the idea of being concise and being able to get your idea across in the smallest amount of words, then that's fine. But that's only for specific occasions. If you're not able to sit down and read a page of A4 journalism because your brain can't concentrate for that long, then I think we're in trouble.
Long live the podcast. That's actually an area that's grown in long form content, actually. Brilliant. So while conversations become shorter on Twitter, it's fair to say there's podcasts out there 2.5 hours long. You know, we average about 45 minutes an hour for a show. So,
and long may it continue.
Yeah, I think it will. So you've mentioned a few times that you have to be creative, and I feel like magic's a really creative space. Like, people, I feel like magicians are always having to make and tweak routines as society changes. And I suppose if you have a trick, there could be like 100 ways of delivering it, depending on whether you're in a pub with drunk people, a hen do, just a couple of people bump into.
You have to, you know, some magicians get very creative, some not, but magic is a very creative field where by using a number of tools at your disposal, which is, and for that, read technique, right? So you learn bits of technique, then the possibilities are endless and the plots are endless of how to put that technique together. But, you know, talking about tech, as this is, you know, podcast is about tech, you know, magic and tech have been amazing, you know. And now, I can't talk about it too much because it's sort of giving away secrets, but I can tell you that tech has magicians love tech. And actually, traditionally, if you look back in history, magicians are some of the first people to start using tech. When tech would be around, then people would go, well, I don't quite know what to do with this, but I'm sure it'll be useful. Magicians would go, we'll have it. We'll play around with that. You know, with reflections and mirrors and science principles, electricity. Yeah. You know, when electricity was sort of like a freak show, you know, magicians were using it to make inanimate objects move. You know, the magic. Now we use it to, you know, power this entire studio. But so magicians love tech, and there are some amazing apps out there that are available to the public. Don't ask me their names, I can't remember a single one of them. But if you search for magic apps that use all this amazing tech that's packed into an iPhone. If you think about what an iPhone, it's got an accelerometer, it knows which side is up, which side is down. You know, it's got camera, it's got micro, it's got so many things. And magicians have really, really tapped into some of that tech with some amazing apps that allow you to really freak your friends out.
So you're saying now that your typical magician ain't just going to be armed with a pack of cards.
No, coins.
You're saying phone, there could be that kind of bunch of tricks.
Correct, because magicians are always, and you know, look, there's some magicians who are very traditional who still want to saw a woman in half and, you know, do all those. And there's space for that because people do still want to see that. But the fantastic magic, the brilliant magic, is when you are able to do magic with stuff that people have around them all the time. So, like, for example, a very old trick used to be the cut and restored rope, right? You get a piece of white rope, you cut it, and then you restore it. Well, that's great, but who carries rope around with them today? No one. But so what do magicians do? Well, they do a cut and restored Apple headphones,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, now I don't know what they're going to do now because there's no leads on the
Well, there's no leads, yeah. So they'll move to something else. Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. So the idea of doing magic with people's phones and with people's headphones and things like that, that is what magic should be and should always sort of carry on developing and carry on creating. But yeah, I can tell you that if you look around on the App Store, there are some amazing magic apps out there.
Cool. And what kind of magic do you like to perform when you're performing magic?
I do mostly sleight of hand cards. That's my thing, always have been. I don't particularly like using any not gadgets, because I have used gadgets, but sort of things that don't look out of place. You know, I quite like doing, I think a pack of cards is very simple and can be any pack of cards. It doesn't have to be a special pack of cards. Keep it simple.
Okay.
It's a bit like jazz, you know, free-form jazz, that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always, when a magician's in the room, I'm always trying to keep an eye on what's going on. And one thing that I've learned about sleight of hand is even if you are told what's happening, when it's done really well, the hand really can be faster than the eye.
Yeah. And it's learning to control your audience. Where are they looking? Because obviously you have to do things with your hands, but, you know, you can do them whilst they're not looking.
All right.
So the idea of being able to, you know how to control someone's attention. That's what magic really entails. And the ability to tell a story. The big problem with magic is you've got two factions, right? You've got people who are technically brilliant, but can't tell a story. And people who can tell a story, but they don't really need to be technically brilliant. Because actually what matters in magic is the story. What's the story you're telling your audience? You know, and it's a bit like saying, well, if you can memorize words, you can be an actor. Well, you can't. If you can do all the technique, you could be a magician. Well, you can call yourself a magician, but you're not really doing magic because you can't attain someone's interest long enough. So, yeah, I think magic's a great way to occupy oneself, to be creative, and to kill an hour.
Nice one.
Or a lifetime.
So you said it was your magician skills that got you. Yeah, definitely a lifetime. There's loads out there. So you say your magic skills, your magic skills as a magician got you onto the real hustle, right? So
yeah.
How did that happen? How did that come across? Because this was a revolutionary show at the time. There was nothing.
It was, wasn't it?
There was fiction that would allude to sort of hustles and scams and stuff. There was no one that would actually sort of say, right, this is what to do. And in a world where it's increasingly more important to kind of not get hustled and scammed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys came along with this show where you were like, there's a million ways that you can get hustled. We're going to show you some of them.
And
we're
we didn't think there was that many.
Yeah.
So Real Hustle happened. There was a big drama that made a lot of waves. I don't know if you remember about that, but it was Hustle with Adrian Lester, which was the drama.
That was
the
show, yeah.
And everyone went nuts about Hustle. And quite rightly, because at the time, it was a bit like Sherlock was the last couple of years. It sort of broke. It was cool. It was swish. It looked amazing. And, it really broke some new ground for UK TV. And at the time, I had just got into magic and I was sort of performing as a professional magician, sort of doing parties and doing bars and clubs and things like that. And the people who I was involved with through the magic world were also involved with Derren Brown. They were doing his show, and the same production company that did Derren wanted to do a show about hustles, a hidden camera show about hustles. And because I knew that kind of magic fraternity, I basically got to audition and be in the show. And that's where it sort of started. And Paul Wilson and myself wrote all the scams, and we carried them out. But I have to say, after series one, we thought, okay, well, maybe we can write a few more. Cut to 7 years later in series 11, and I think we did four or five specials. We were still coming up with them.
Yes, I mean, and some of them were really nice and simple and quick, quick switches, which I find that they were some of the ones that were really like, oh, wow, this is crazy. And then you did some really elaborate ones as well.
Then we went a little bit crazy with some of the really kind of complicated, elaborate ones. I never know whether they worked or not, because sometimes I think they were a bit too complicated. But everything we did do was always connected to real events. So we never really made up scams that didn't exist. We took a scam and sort of spun it to make it a little bit more TV friendly. But, you know, we finished, I think it was 2010, so it was a while back now. And I think it was a good job that we finished because the scams are still there. All the same scams are there. But we would have ended up starting to repeat ourselves.
Yeah.
But I think, and it happened towards the end, we started doing a lot more tech scams. And tech scams are very important and they can be brilliant, but they don't make good telly. Because all you're seeing is someone just looking at a screen, right?
Yeah.
And that just doesn't look good on TV. Whereas if you're bumping into someone and by bumping into them, you steal their wallet, you know, or you distract them and you grab their bag, et cetera, or you kind of show up with a car and you switch the keys and then you drive off with that, you know, those are visual, you know, if it's a Ferrari and if it's in Vegas, it looks great, you know, and you have that moment of, oh my God, are they going to get caught? Which is what made The Real Hustle work. Me sending you a malicious app on your phone ain't going to have the same effect.
Oh, we got his password. Yeah. Yes.
You know, yeah, and yet, yeah, some of the stuff, because I've carried on doing the scams. You know, I do a lot of keynote speaking and after dinner speaking and all that kind of stuff. And I talk a lot to companies about how to protect themselves, yeah, from scams. And, you know, some of the most devastating scams are really, really simple tech scams that I've come across. And they are absolutely devastating. There's a scam at the moment which I just think, this could happen to me and I would find it difficult to avoid. You want to know what it is?
Yeah,
now?
Of course.
So it's a very, very simple scam. And I'm not breaking big ground here, but it's text spoofing. So this whole, you remember there was a Spoof My Text, were like websites that you could go and prank your friends, yeah, by you enter their phone number on a website and then you can send them a text message pretending to be from another text number.
Right.
So a friend of mine, Scott McGrady, who does a lot of work on uncovering scams, he built this little program that he has access to, I have access to, and some police departments have access to, just for purposes of demonstration. But what he was able to do and to replicate, and what is already been done by scammers, but he was replicating it for us to show it to people, just to show them how easy it is the ability to spoof text people and pretend you're their bank.
Wow.
So if I know that you bank, let's say you bank with Barclays, right? Right? And if I know that, and I know what Barclays put at the top of their text messages, and I think it's capital B and the rest are lowercase, I can use that and pretend I am Barclays and send you a text that will sort itself in the conversation you've already been having with your bank. So, yeah, you see your face.
You've had previous messages,
yeah, correct,
from your bank, so
genuine
the money
messages
you sent,
yeah,
this will drop in the message.
That will drop in the conversation of those messages. So if you've had like a log of a year's worth of text messages that Barclays have been sending you, which are genuine, I could just drop another one in and it will look like it's come from Barclays. Now, in that message, I could be saying, did you just spend $3,000 at the Apple store in New York? If this wasn't you, please click this link. I mean, you click the link, it's game over. Or I could say, you know, we've got a brand new offer, or you've won something, give us a call here at Barclays customer help, you know. So it's a great way of socially engineering someone to either click on a bad link or to give that third-party trust to a website or a phone number. And I thought, well, I could fall for that. I've done every scam imaginable, but I could probably fall for that.
I wanted to know, have you ever been scammed? Have you ever been?
It's the most commonly asked question.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
It's like not making a professional footballer. No. That's what I feel like. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, get him. You know what I mean?
Get him.
Yes.
Do you know what? I haven't. And okay. And I don't say that with any sort of
No, he's laughing right now. If you're watching, yeah, it's a direct challenge.
Please don't. I haven't, but that's not because I'm too street smart or unscammable. Look, it's the thing I open up with all my talks: is it, falling for a scam is not a measure of your IQ. It's being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and being distracted. it hasn't happened to me to my knowledge. But if it did, you can rest assured that I would be screaming off the rooftops about it because... Yeah. And this isn't an open challenge to anybody listening out there.
So Jeremy Clarkson put his bank details in the paper.
What
anyway.
An absolute moron. Real proper moron. This isn't a challenge, but, you know, if I were to be scammed,
yeah.
I think someone like me standing up and saying, look, I can be scammed. Therefore, all of you lot out there, and I know you know who you are listening right now who think, oh, I'd never fall for a scam. Then that should make those people think again. Because if I can fall for it, then anybody can fall for it.
It's very interesting. And would you say the best scams are the ones that no one ever really knows they've been, like if you never ever know you've been hustled, if someone chisels, I don't know.
Yeah,
but I think there was a few phone scams that I saw where you, I think it was a delivery driver came in and picked up a phone.
Yeah. Oh, that was a genuine, proper big scam that happened in the early 2000s, late 90s in New York.
Yeah.
I don't think it happens, well, it could happen anymore now because there's no reason why you couldn't do it. But yeah, this was... was given to us by, I think it was a police guy who we met. But anyway, in New York, a bunch of scammers dressed up as couriers, and they would show up at big, big buildings, big corporation buildings, right? Genuine rule of thumb, the bigger the corporation, the bigger the hotel, you know, the more stars it's got, the easier they are to scam because they're busy. And because they're worried about insulting and keeping people customers waiting, they're worried about insulting their guests, etc. They don't know who you are. They have to be polite. So that's why they get targeted. And also, a bigger corporation is not likely to notice if their phone bill goes up by a couple of $1,000s, right? So what they would do is they would show up at reception with a parcel and say, "Hey, I've got a delivery for someone in here." And that parcel was just a made up name, and reception would go, "That's not for us," and the courier would give a big sob story and go, "Oh man, you know, I'm going to lose out. I get paid by the hour. I've got to find who. Do you mind if I use your phone to call main office?" Now, of course, I've just answered my question of why you couldn't do that today is because most people would have mobile phones.
Right, yeah,
but
yeah.
Back then, no mobile phones. And the receptionist would go, "Sure, yeah, sure. Just use the phone over there, you know, call the office and stuff." And what they would do is they would dial a premium rate number and stay on it for like 10, 15 minutes and hang up. And the only reason they were caught is primarily the reason why most people get caught is because they got cocky.
Right.
So what they would do is they would go in, they'd dial the number, and then they would leave the phone off the hook and walk out the building. So then that's when people started noticing, and a word went around from all the corporations. We've had some couriers come in. They always leave them. And they looked into it, and of course, they uncovered the scam.
All right, they could have got away with it if they didn't get too greedy, potentially.
Don't get greedy.
Yeah, interesting. So what was one of the most elaborate scams you think you did on a Real Hustle then?
Oh, man. We did loads of really elaborate ones.
What was one of the hardest ones to pull off then?
Again, really tough to pick. I'll give you a really good elaborate one. And again, a real scam that was told to us by... I think it may not have been a police source, but it was another source. But we were trying to sell gold chains to do a sort of like a gold trade. Only our gold chains were rubbish. They weren't, you know, 24 karat gold. They were way less than that in quality. And the way you test gold is you do an acid test on it. So you apply acids to the metal, and by the discoloration, you get to see what exactly the metal is made of, what it consists of. And the acid test box is a sort of small little wooden box with lots of vials in it with acid. And we got this scam. And basically what it is, I'll start again. Basically what it is you switch the acid test to an acid test that will produce the results that you want. So, because what happens with these sales is you've got a seller and a buyer, and the buyer will always bring their specialist, right? And this is someone usually with a PhD, right, in metallurgy or something like that. And they bring their own kit. So what we did is we invited them and we set up a security check on the way into the building. I said, sorry, I've got to check your bag. And as I was checking her bag, I switched the kit over to our kit, our acid test kit. So when she tested it, she was testing it with a kit that we had prepared, which then produced the results that made her think that it was 24 karat gold. So I think that was kind of one of the most complex ones, because we had to find out what kind of kit she would use so it would match identically and all that kind of stuff. So it was really complex. But we did loads of really complicated stuff, but yeah, all based on ideas that have happened before, you know.
Yeah, I think that it was informative and it kind of encouraged you to keep your wits about you. And one of the things I did love is in some of the cutscenes, you did always manage to nail you guys, like the cheeky little look at the secret camera as well. I think that sort of smashed it. Like, wallet in your hand, you'd be like,
keeping it, going back to tech.
Yeah,
here's an interesting thing about The Real Hustle. If only we had GoPros.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you've got to understand, this show started filming in 2006. Okay, that's 13 years ago. And hidden cameras back then were not very hidden. Because, well, they were hidden, but they needed a lot of hiding. You know, it required it was a Toshiba lens, so it was about the size of a, I don't know, put two GoPros together, glue them together, right? And that was just the lens, right? And the sort of the camera bit. The recording bit, you had to plug that into a little mini DV deck.
Wow. Remember those? So those are really small tapes.
What is he talking about?
So those
mythical things called VHSs. Why weren't they streaming it?
Wait, what did they use Wi-Fi for?
And we had to hide those. So you had to hide the wire. You had to hide everything. I remember once wearing one of those things on my person. I had it under my arm, wrapped in a newspaper, as if I was carrying a newspaper. And the mini DV deck was strapped to my back. I mean, it was...
And this was high tech then as well.
This was like really high tech. Yeah. And there was a spy phone that we bought, which was this tiny little sort of Ericsson phone with a camera in it. And you had to sort of point it at people and the resolution was shit. But we just thought, fuck me. Can you imagine if we did Real Hustle with GoPros? It would have been so much simpler.
Yeah.
And so much easier.
Well, I think... Because we're so tech savvy now, people expect techie scams, right? More so than they would the classics. So just saying, there could be a chance that, you know, could refresh some of our memories with some of these scams.
Could refresh some of the, well, you know what? I'll tell you something. It's rules have changed when it comes to the things you can do on telly, and also rules have changed with what's acceptable by people, especially with GDPR and things like that.
Right.
So me saying, right, here's proof that I can hack your Facebook page, even if I'm doing it for a show, I can get into a lot of trouble.
Okay.
Because under GDPR rules, you can have some serious objections and go, I don't care what show you're making, you've hacked my Facebook.
Right.
Do you see what I mean? That it becomes really problematic with tech scams because people live their lives on tech. If I compromise your phone, right, and I go, hey, Marcus, it's all right, we're just doing a show, I'm just going to take all the malware off it, right, and it's going to be fine. Are you telling me you're not going to suspect that something's still on there?
Time for a new phone.
Next time your phone freezes, you're going to go, that Alex, he's got something on my phone, he's tracking me.
Yeah.
You know, so it's become very, very difficult to do those tech scams in the kind of environment that we did it under in The Real Hustle, which was real people not knowing they're being filmed, being scammed. Mm. Now, I think in order for me to show you what would happen, I'd have to do it in a very controlled environment, which becomes less exciting to watch.
Yeah.
I did a show called Secrets of the Scammers, and we built it was Channel 5 quite a while back, and I have no technical know-how at all, but
I own it, man.
Some people at Sophos, the antivirus company, built an app for Android, which masqueraded as a free flashlight app. And we got this girl to download it on her Android Samsung phone, and it was so scary what it was able to do. It just sat there on her phone. Worked like a flashlight app, But what it did was it gave us access to both cameras back to front without any lights going on. Mike, or her address book, or her, all the messaging was instantly ported over to our computer. We could turn the camera and look at her, film her, photograph her without her knowing. Sounds creepy, doesn't it?
What?
And all the GPS was available to us as well. So we knew where she was and we could see and hear everything from her phone. I mean, if you think about it, we are carrying around the ultimate spy device
perfect.
In our pockets.
Yes, perfect.
Every single day. Yeah. And none of us really know how they work.
Yeah. We all, if we use social media, say, if Twitter says, can I use your microphone? If you wanted to upload a video of you talking once. A lot of people don't forget that you said yes once and now
that's forever.
Forever, yeah. So after knocking out a few seasons of The Real Hustle and doing and being kind of known as sort of Alexis the Gentleman, who is, you know, he's out there to scam you. Yeah. Did it ever affect like you making a real life purchase? Did you ever walk into a shop and be like, yeah, I have a Mars bar, please? People are like, yeah, right.
Yeah. Usually, like when I try to pay for something, people go, is this a real £10 note? You know, that kind of stuff. I remember once, I think it was just about when we moved and we were looking at a house with an estate agent and he sort of kept giggling. And I said, are you all right? And he said, I'm on a real hustle. I said, no, we're genuinely looking to buy a house. Yeah. He's like, oh, I thought this was going to be some elaborate scam.
Gosh, what looking forward to this scam.
It's like sort of like going along with it. But I have to say, it's never affected me in a negative way. It's always been positive. And also to some of my prejudices as well, sometimes where, you know, I don't know, I'd be on my own on a train and like a gang of like lads would come in and I'd go, oh, shit, I'm on my own. You know, these guys look like they're looking for trouble. And then all of a sudden I go, Alex, Real Hustle, mate. And I'm like, oh, thank God, you know. And I was kind of like, oh, yeah, show some barber, you know. And everyone's always been really positive and really kind of like, what's weird now is people finding the show, you know, younger people now finding the show because it's all still up on YouTube. And, you know, getting a younger generation kind of going, oh, my God, I saw the scam. And because for me, The Real Hustle's, you know, it's gone. It's something that happened in the past, but people are still lapping it up on YouTube.
Everyone loves a good scam.
They do.
Not the kind of scam, like, you know, it's not like you're like, on this week's episode, we're going to do a good old-fashioned nanny mugging. You're not doing that. You know what I mean? Like, it's cheeky. You know that everyone's safe afterwards.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. It's a safe environment. You kind of get to see it, all the crime, but you know no one's really going to get hurt. I think that's kind of, that's what's intriguing. It's like,
exactly.
It's fun, you know what I mean, for all the right reasons. But you love tech.
I do love tech.
So another show you did was Joy of Tech.
Joy of Techs with Marcus Brigstock,
Yeah, so you and Marcus, very different
the
when
odd
it comes
couple.
To tech, right?
Yeah.
The
odd
so
couple.
Are you mates outside
we
the show?
We are, yeah, no, we're really good mates.
So how did the show come together then?
Literally was... we play poker together a lot. So there's this little gang of us who play poker. And we sort of always said...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
why don't we do something? We spend a bit more time with each other. Well, I see you around the poker table, or if we go out for lunch or something, I want you to come up with an idea. And as you know, in telly, all these things take an absolute eternity to come together. And the show went through various different types of what it could be, but it entailed the two of us doing something. And we ended up with this idea. I can't even remember where it came from, but after one of the meetings with some production execs who said, well, why don't you do something with tech? Because not a lot of people are doing tech. And then it sort of naturally progressed after that, that I really love tech. Marcus is quite cynical. It's not that he hates tech, but he's quite cynical about its usefulness.
Yes.
So we went off and we did it. And we're still trying to do a second series, because they do want us to do one, but it's you know, telly at the moment is a very, very difficult thing to make because it costs money and no one's got any.
Yeah. Well, I can see it sitting online. Could be a Netflix jobby.
Yeah. So we are still trying to pursue it. But it was a lot of fun. And actually, it made me think a lot about tech. And it made me think about how much of tech is out there because we need it, and how much of it is out there because it's possible. And that's sort of been the conflict, I think. And of course, look, we deliberately went out of our way to pick tech that would give us comedy value.
Oh, there was some funky stuff in there.
You know, the Winbot is not really, even though I ended up with it and I cleaned my windows with it twice.
Yeah.
You know, just get a freaking squidgy in a bucket.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need a robot that kind of does your windows for you. But the mowing thing, I'd have if I needed it. But and I did get to keep one of the gadgets from it.
What'd you get to keep?
Well, it was quite devious. I got it on there because I wanted to ask if I could keep it.
Good job. We need to start doing that here.
Oh, no. There we go. Yeah. So when I did MasterChef, Celebrity MasterChef, there was a gadget on there that everybody used, bar me, because I didn't know how to use it. And I thought, better stick with the stuff that I know how to use. But there's a kitchen gadget, which any chef that I've come across, like a proper chef, people do it properly, it's the only gadget they have in their kitchen, and that's a thing called the Thermomix.
What's a Thermomix?
A Thermomix. It's a company, a German company called Vorwerk, and they make Hoovers, only like two Hoovers. I suppose they don't make Hoovers. They make vacuum cleaners.
Yeah, that's right.
And they make a Thermomix. And the Thermomix is, do you know what a Vitamix is?
I have no idea.
Nutribullet?
Oh, yes. Yes, okay. I know one of those.
So Thermomix is a Nutribullet on steroids.
All right.
Right? So it's a Nutribullet. It's basically a blender that can also heat and cook your food and under very controlled temperatures.
So it blends and heats.
It blends and heats.
At the same time?
Yeah. Only if you wanted to. Okay. You can just blend or you could just heat. But you can... I know this is going to sound like an infomercial, but it isn't. I don't have any affiliation or represent them or anything. But you know, you can put coffee in it, and it'll turn it into, you know, coffee beans. It will turn it into ground coffee. You can put rice, and it will grind it into rice flour. You can cook a risotto from scratch in it because it can turn the heat on and stir at the same time. You can do intricate sauces, make mash, make it. I mean, it does so many freaking things that you just thought, wow, as a gadget, this is actually so practical because it replaces like seven other things that you would have to keep in your kitchen. And it does everything. And it's one of those things that is made properly by people who know what you kind of need, which I find lacks in tech a lot. You go, oh, this is good. And you kind of go, who's designed this? I mean, so it's one of the only gadgets that I thought in that show, which I ended up keeping and I use on virtually a daily basis. But there was quite a few other stuff that sort of impressed. But there wasn't anything that both of us, although I might remember something, there wasn't anything that both of us kind of went, oh, fuck me, this is incredible. The torch was quite impressive. There was a torch that lit a fire.
Oh, that's cool. That's pretty cool. That's something. Was that in the camping episode?
Yeah, you had themes in different episodes. We had themes. The torch that lit the fire was pretty damn impressive because I thought, nah, this is bollocks. This will never work.
Yeah.
But it was good. But all the, you know, in the skiing episode, all the stuff that I was wearing that was battery powered and keeping me warm, you know, yeah, all right. But the hassle of the batteries and the charging them to just buy yourself a good fleece.
Yeah, move around a little bit. Yeah. Just exercise, you know, a bit. Yeah.
Just, yeah, maybe move. Yeah. And I had these sort of super amazing goggles that showed you your speed and your location as a heads up display. I think they were Oakley goggles. But the screen was at the bottom of your field of vision. So if you are going really fast, you're like, hey, I must be hitting 90. If you look down, you're screwed. So I was like, okay, this is a fun thing, but maybe I wasn't a good enough skier. I don't know. But it was a show that we both really enjoyed doing. And some of the arguments we got into were genuine. You know, I genuinely got frustrated with him.
His disdain for certain like, I could just see you trying your hardest to explain things, like, just work with me. And he's like,
I was like, give me this win, you know. I made a 1998 VCR talk to an all-in-one, you know, Harmony remote. I was like, come on.
Exactly.
I was like, don't watch videos anymore, so what.
Yeah, then all the time it's taking you to do that, I could have walked over there and pressed play.
I was getting all that.
You got a win or two though, didn't you, out of him?
I did get a couple of good wins. I got the usually the most unaffordable things. There was a fantastic coffee machine that we went to this house that sort of kitted up with gadgets, and there's a sort of a coffee machine that lives under your worktop, and it's got a tap, and you control it with an app, and it's but you know, you say oh yeah and I say oh yeah, but here's the thing. It's the same size as a half-size dishwasher, right?
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. Right. And it costs about $4,000.
So you need to be mega rich, basically, yeah, and have an enormous kitchen and be like, yeah, I'm going to throw car money.
So it's like, what? Yeah. And it's like, what is something small and practical that you can afford and is genuinely very useful? Yeah. You know, and those gadgets are very few and far between. But I think I lost Marcus with my sock sorter. Who makes this stuff? But we found this. So socks, black socks, that come chipped. So they've got a sort of what looks like a button.
Yeah.
Right? Each black sock's got a button sewn onto it, which is an RFID chip. It comes with an app and an RFID reader.
Mm-hmm.
And you can scan each sock, so it tells you which one's the left one, which one's the right one, they're identical.
Yeah.
And so you can pair them up with cycle washers, because you don't want to wash.
Yes.
You don't want to be wearing a left sock that's been washed 10 times and a right sock that's been washed once, right? Because one's going to wear out more than the other.
Oh, I'm telling you out. Oh my God, that sounds amazing to me.
When I showed it to Marcus, I think he wanted to hit me. I think he genuinely thought, what is wrong with you? You know, now I may have picked it because I kind of knew it would rile him up a bit.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how much stuff there's out there.
That is the kind of crappy gadget or stupid gadget I would absolutely love. There's nothing I hate
more than
having a slightly greyer sock out on my teeth. Because I'm a creature of comfort in certain areas of my life, and I wear the same type of sock I have for years. In fact, it's an ongoing joke in my family. What do you want for Christmas? What do you want for your birthday? Right. I'm like, that type of boxer short, that type of socks. Same thing. Everyone's like, can I get you a bottle of drink or something? I'm like, no, boxer shorts, socks. Get me the white socks this time if you want, or the black ones. So when I put my socks through the wash, either I do like a yearly cull of socks and I start afresh, which is great.
Oh my God.
Fresh socks for ages. Or I sit there and I actually, when I'm pairing up my socks, I kind of...
He's not joking.
I'm being serious.
He's not joking.
I don't... I'm not saying I take a microscope out and I'm like, right, that's a quarter of a shade grayer, but the grayer ones live together in the darker ones.
Oh my god, this gadget was designed for you.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't see this. I'll find out. I'm pinging over to you.
Yeah, let me know.
My memory is terrible.
Could be hanging around at the back of a production studio somewhere.
Probably. It's going to be there somewhere.
Some gadgets they solve a problem that you might have, and some are really just for a bit of tinkering and a bit of fun, though, right? Like, I feel like some gadgets, people just like a little bit of a fiddle when they're doing something, though.
Yeah, I mean, there was stuff that you thought, I can see where they're going with this, but they haven't either got enough money or the tech is not all together there. There was one thing which was, again, my memory's just terrible, but I think, was it called iRobot? But anyway, there was this big sort of... what it looked like is a sort of a big ball and the stick, and you put an iPad on there and you sort of FaceTime people. You can move around in the room. So you can move forward, back and forward, and it's got some sort of gyro in it, so you can't really knock it over. So you can even push it and it'll right itself. And, you know, I can sense that kind of stuff with more people working from home. People want to be able to sort of, I don't know, move around the office.
I would love that.
I mean, it's just a bizarre thing. But with those kind of things, I look at it and I kind of go, okay, this isn't the finished product, but this kind of betrays where we're going. That sort of the idea that you can be remotely present and remotely independent in another area. So yes, the idea of an iPad on a stick moving around the office and you kind of going, oh, hi Marcus, how are you doing? What are you looking over your shoulder? You know, is laughable. But, you know, how laughable was an idea of, I don't know, a mobile phone doing all these things, you know, 20 years ago?
Exactly. I think it's the refinement, because a lot of the tech that we've seen, like touchscreen technology and tablets, were around well before the original kind of iPhone dropped in the iteration that we saw it. And a lot of gadgets and tech, what I feel sometimes when I'm looking at people that have new ideas, is they're trying to find that problem you don't realize you had. Now, that's worked.
Yeah.
Like with phones, people didn't realize the problem that we all have, which is we are addicted to constant interaction.
Yeah, right?
But we didn't realize it was at that level. And the mobile phone solved that issue.
Well, you can but you could argue that the mobile phone sort of also created some of
course,
it as well.
Of course, yeah.
Because we did all right.
We were fine, but it took advantage of this. You know, now it's a problem, but it took advantage of that, you know.
Yeah.
And it also helps people. I think that, let's use the first iPhone, for example. Phones before then were very techy. They did quite a bit, but the UI wasn't good. The user experience is really hard to kind of just use them. I think that kind of development of phones kind of made devices that did what you expected them to do when you touch them. Well, you know, when you moved your finger up and down the screen and you got a swiping movement, you could scroll up and down. People were like, oh, wow, that's so intuitive.
And a pinch, you know.
A pinch, like normal things like that. But a lot of other tech, people try and solve an issue you don't realise that you've had, like you've kind of mentioned with a few other bits of tech.
Oh, we found loads of tech, which was like, what is the point in this? And some of it was also quite expensive, but you just thought, why would anyone buy that? But it does betray the fact that with a lot of tech, if it's possible, someone will go out and do it, because someone will go out and buy it. And someone will sort of find a use to it. But I think sometimes when I look at that tech and I kind of think, my God, that's useless, I think twice and kind of go, but actually, what does it tell us? Where are we going? You know, there was a plant pot that sort of, you know, told you all about the moisture and fed your plant when you were away and stuff like that. Now, it was super expensive for something that you could actually solve for half the price and sort of, you know, just get somebody to come around
and water your plants. Maybe,
but again, it sort of betrays this whole, you know, and we've seen that trend of control your home from your phone, you know, that whole idea of being able to kind of, oh, what's in my fridge remotely, and I need to water my plant now I need to open the door. You know, actually, we didn't test it on the show. I was sent it because I interviewed the inventor, but, you know, for me, a prime example, the Ring doorbell, right,
now owned by Amazon.
Do they?
Amazon bought it, yeah,
because Amazon's got their own, they've got Blink, haven't they?
They bought
Ring,
bought it, yeah, they own it. Amazon are out there buying stuff. Like, of course people don't realize how the Amazon are out there writing
on Google.
Checks.
On Google, yeah, yeah. Because Nest Google?
Is Nest Google? See, I don't know. Yeah.
Nest, so, yeah. I think, is owned by Google.
I wouldn't be surprised if Amazon and Google were both in the running. Little bit more.
But, you know, again, I just thought this is sort of interesting. And because it was a sort of, I was talking to him about security and the Ring doorbell. I'm sure the gadget aware on this show, I don't need to explain it, but it has a motion sensor, tells you if someone's outside your door. And also if someone rings it, you get a notification on your phone. And well, more importantly, you can speak to them. So it opens a two-way communication. And again, you know, I thought, well, you don't really need it. But again, it just becomes quite useful because the Amazon delivery guy or the other, so sorry, we're not home, just leave it outside. Or
see what you did there? The Amazon delivery guy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or the unsolicited call. And I was sort of promoting it for mostly because, again, I work a lot in security. I was promoting it more for if you have an elderly relative, then actually a Ring doorbell was fantastic because if you're at work, or you don't live in the same town don't live in the same house as your elderly relative and some unscrupulous scammer wants to go and talk your auntie or your mum into signing up for something she doesn't need, then once they ring the doorbell, you say, thanks, but no thanks, no one's at home, bye-bye. And you know what they look like and you've got a picture of their face. So, that's a useful gadget for me. Mm. But again, it's been through a process of years where we've honed into it and it became complete. So it's a complete product now.
Okay. This is a bit of a hard question, I'm going to throw at you, because there's a lot going around now with kind of the tweaks that are happening with internet speed, with 5G and such.
Yeah.
What, future gazing now, what do you think could be a big thing that could potentially kind of make a big shift in a tech and gadget world as somebody who's kind of been around things, seen things in development? It's a bit of a sticky one,
I know. It's a sticky one because the one thing that we know is going to be the thing, because I see it with my daughter, who's 12. I don't know about you. I'm 47, and verbal commands is not a thing for me. I hardly ever use Siri. I find the idea of having an Alexa in my house an anathema. Love the gadget, but just wouldn't have it on security purposes due to security concerns. But I see the younger generation, and I have a friend of mine who works for IBM, and they do some amazing stuff there with Watson, the AI. And I think AI is going to be, so a twofold answer to your question. AI, I think, I don't know where that's going to take us. Some fascinating things happening with AI. I don't know if you've seen some of the Watson, I don't know what it's called. Is it called the debater? But if you Google that, you have Watson, which essentially is an AI brain, doing live debates with people, live. So it's using speech recognition to understand. So they set up a debate. They'll say, we'll debate, I don't know, capital punishment. Watson, you're going to be for. A human debater will be against. Go. He listens to the human, voice analyzes, speech recognition, pulls everything from the internet, left, right, and center, synthesizes speech, and argues back.
Would love Watson to argue with my other half. Might win.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
I think those are the big. Yeah, I mean, when I heard about it, it sort of blew my mind. And of course,
and just to clarify, in real time, and addresses. So, for example, if I was like point one, point two, point three, it would hit you.
Real time. I haven't watched enough of the debate to know how effective it is, but I know IBM have been, you know, they've been exhibiting it. So I would imagine that it's good enough. But you know, as a journalist, for me, immediately my brain went to, well, live fact checking. Like if you can have an all powerful computer system, AI, listening to someone live and pull stuff from the internet to counterbalance their argument, or see, to my mind, I'm thinking, well, if you counterbalance, you can also fact check, right? Because you're still pulling the same information from somewhere else to verify. Now that would completely change the political scene in my mind. You know, the whole idea of misinformation, the ability to be able to target and distinguish between and I hate using the phrase, so I won't use the phrase that Trump uses, but misinformation versus actual fact. If we can get AI to help us with that, to help us steer through the noise, that I think to my mind will be one of the huge breakthroughs in where tech will be able to have a big impact in our lives. So that's, you know, and we have some interesting choices to make concerning AI, you know, the driverless cars and all that kind of stuff, because they're, you know, AI, if AI has to take decisions, then morality comes into it. So there's a very interesting conversation. So that's one side. And I think the other side is the idea that we're going to go from actually typing stuff in to our phones to actually just speaking.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a big difference. I mean, I feel like an idiot if I have to go, hey, Siri, what's the weather outside? You know, I'm expecting Siri to go, you've got a window, open it. You know, but my daughter thinks nothing of when she's doing homework to kind of go, Siri, what's the, you know, population of Australia?
Yeah.
Whereas for me, I'd have to type that in.
Yeah. That's, to go back to what you said about AI and how that's going to affect things like automated vehicles. Legislation is a very interesting part, and law is a very interesting part of AI, because not only are there the moral implications, like you said, you know, there's that conversation that people have where there's two cars, one's got, you know, an older gentleman in it or a family in it, and how do the cars decide if they're going to crash, who crashes where and who gets hurt and whatever. And
but isn't it interesting though, sorry to isn't it interesting on that a human doesn't have to make that choice, so why are we so concerned about AI making that choice? So, I don't know what the answer to that is, but it is fascinating.
Because if you're driving, if you're driving and you're in the car, yourself and your daughter's in the car, and somebody comes towards you, I feel like your mind, because you're not aware. Yeah, exactly. Partly because you're not aware.
But I'm not going to think about, oh, do I go left? There's a granny there. Or do I go right? There's a young football team there.
Yeah,
go to where my, you know, you're just going to go away.
Yeah.
So I don't see why we're concerned about what the AI are going to choose. But I see the point.
Yeah, I
see the point. It's because we are about to abdicate responsibility to an inanimate object, and we're going to have to account for that.
I feel like it's one of those things you have to just trust, but trusting it, that's very easy to say, but very, very hard, because we don't know, as I'm sure you're aware, with every technology it can be abused. I might put, you know, a little bit of code in the system that means if I decide to drive like a lunatic, all the cars move out of my way, crash into lampposts, other cars, off cliffs, and I'm fine. Sure, somebody would probably invent that. So it's such a vast conversation, because it's going to be very interesting.
It is going to be interesting, but I think what we always have to remember is, what are we trying to get out of it?
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes we're sort of, as I said in the beginning, I think sometimes, and certainly when you look at it from security point of view, which is always where I'm coming from, is sometimes the gadgets and the tech is there because it can be. Because it's possible, rather than does anybody need it? Is it safe? Is it making someone's life easier? Or is it serving some sort of purpose? And very often than not, from a security point of view, security is last on the list. It's like, hey, we found, like, if you speak to this box, it'll tell you what the weather is. Great, brilliant, let's put it out to market. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Is it listening to everything you say? Can it be used by someone to access personal information?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we saw with contactless cards. In the beginning, Amex made their contactless card. And you could stand next to someone with an Amex in their wallet, and they would spit out name, address, and credit card number. Now, what happens is the guy who's invented, or the lady who's invented, the person who's invented the contactless, they're impressed by the fact that they can communicate contactless with that chip. They're not thinking about the security aspect of it, and neither should they, because that's not their job. Their job is to be creative and move us forward, right? The person who's invented pacemakers is a good one, right? So pacemaker, you get a pacemaker for it, right? If it needs to be adjusted, like 10 years ago, it needs to crack you open again, take it out, adjust it, put it back in. So that's big operation. So somebody goes, right, well, why don't we make a Bluetooth-enabled one, right? Or a Wi-Fi-enabled one. Remote access, we can change it and operate. Fucking brilliant. That's brilliant. Why should the same person still think, well, hang on a minute, someone can hack that and switch it off?
Yeah.
But that conversation needs to happen. You know, it's how cars were hacked. Cars were hacked because of Bluetooth communication, because from tire pressure sensors to the CPU of a car, right? Again, someone said, hey, wouldn't it be great if you knew the pressure in your tires? We'll just put a Bluetooth sensor, talk to the CPU, you get a warning on your dashboard. Brilliant. No one for a second thought, hang on, if you open a communication between CPU and the tire sensor with Bluetooth, someone can hack it, which is exactly what happened. But we sort of need to start thinking about that. Let people be creative, but don't go out to market before you've let people like myself or people, you know, other people way more qualified to go, right, how can this be exploited?
Yeah, and I think that is the key to kind of a nice steady growth in technology and gadgets.
Steady, but it's never going to happen, Marcus.
I feel like you've given me the real life version of Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park.
It's just never going to happen because people want to be first.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people want to be first is the key.
Yeah,
and you want to be first, and you know. But what we can do as consumers is don't get the first, get the second gen, third gen.
When is that where you sit with tech as well?
You're aware of what's new, but you sit
back and let something...
When it's brand new, I don't touch it. So, for example, I don't. You know, I've told you about my concerns about Alexa and all those Google Home and all those assistants. I mean, all you need to know is Alexa information was used in a murder case by the FBI in the US, right? If that doesn't tell you that... It collects enough information to be used as evidence in court against you or for you, then he's thinking about it now. But, you know, so, but once, so for example, I never used contactless, right?
I've got one card that's right. Contactless.
But here's the thing that people go, oh, he's a hypocrite. I use Apple Pay.
All right.
But Apple Pay needs my face scan, right? Which is very, very different to contactless. Right, it's got that extra little step of security, which is I have to have my face pointing at the camera, and I'm happy with that.
You got an Apple Watch.
I've got a first gen Apple Watch. Okay,
I don't know if that one does Apple Pay on it.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Oh no, actually, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, with no limit on that.
But it's no limit. Yeah, yeah. But I just use it as a watch. I don't have any of the notifications and stuff on it.
Fair enough. Let's not forget to talk about the radio show, by the way.
Yes.
How long have you been broadcasting?
So 3 years.
3 years.
Bizarre. I don't know. Do you know what? I'm always waiting for a tap on the shoulder of someone to go, mate, you've been found out. Just go back to being a magician or an actor or something. But so you've been found out. Go back home.
It's not like you're not doing that. Was This Is Radio. It's a talk show, talk radio. So
talk radio. So what happened was 3 years ago when they first put the station together, they said to me, do you want to come and do a consumer show? And I said, yeah, sure. I know about consumer. I was going to talk about scams and tech and everything and things to watch out for. And I'm blessed with having great contacts. As I said, Scott McGrady, ethical hacker, brilliant, writes brilliant. There's another guy who those tech-minded amongst you who really love your tech is a guy called Professor Alan Woodward. Find him on Twitter. Amazing info on tech and security. So I thought I can use all that stuff and, you know, do a decent show on Saturdays. And I did it for a year and a half, and then everything changed at the station. And they said, look, we're not doing any specialist programs anymore. Everyone is doing news, current affairs news. And, of course, it was around the referendum time. Well, post-referendum time, but, you know, what a political scene. I'm a little bit gobby when it comes to getting involved in politics. I don't believe in that sort of... BBC impartiality. I just think, what's the point in that? I have an opinion. I'm going to express it, and I invite people who disagree with me to a discussion. You know, this whole idea of like, well, yes, it could be black, but it could also be a little bit white. It's like, you're not helping anybody. You know, just go with something. So I really loved it and sort of took to it like a duck to water. So now I've ended up doing a 3-hour basically phone-in political debate.
And things can get quite heated on the show.
Christ, yeah. Yeah, yeah, they do. And I try not to. And I try and be calm, but I find it very, very, very difficult to be calm when I'm arguing with people, especially politicians, actually. I mean, the one thing I learned, as I said, I keep mentioning I'm 47, and I'm Greek as well. And I came here when I was about 16. But, you know, so born in 1972, came from a sort of a country where respect for elders, respect for people who've got an ology, you know, like if you're a doctor, a lawyer, a politician, a police officer, anything like that, you're not trained, the culture in Greece, there's a lot of respect for those people. So when I first started interviewing...
No! Oh, wait, all right.
His Apple Watch has recorded everything.
What was that for there?
I don't know. All right.
Love it.
Woo.
All right, I think I...
His voice has changed. I'm not sure I understand.
It was like, Greece, all right, we need to see what's going on with the police.
Yeah, MI5 were on their way. When I started interviewing politicians, in the very beginning, I can't remember who my first interview was with, and I don't want to get too political because I don't want to upset people on the podcast, but I thought... Oh, you know, I'm talking to a politician here. And then after the interview, I thought, they're not very bright. And then I interviewed a few more and I thought, actually, very few of them understand a lot about what they actually do. Very few of them are bright. I always thought these are people with degrees. They've been lawyers. And actually, they're just people and they're wrong. And not all of them, but, you know, I know it might sound really naive, but it was a real wake-up call for me that just because a politician is saying it doesn't necessarily make it true and doesn't necessarily make it even worth considering because they might be talking out of their backside for political gain. So it's been really, really interesting. And boy, what a time to be doing a political phone-in show.
Probably the most politically charged 5 years. In the last 50, I'd say, or 30, you know, when it comes to kind of everyone really discussing a single point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't think there's a day that goes by where we don't hear about the EU.
Yeah.
You're hard pressed to walk down the street and not hear somebody talking about it. You know?
And how quickly everything changes. And it is tech, you know. Yeah. It could change from an hour. You know, John Bercow says something in Parliament and then, you know, everything has changed. Everything has changed.
Yeah.
And you rely on tech to keep you abreast. And actually, I don't think I could do my job as well as I do it, if I do it well enough. That's subjective. But I don't think I could do it as well without the tools that tech affords me, which is, you know, fact checking, being able to cross reference sources, being able to connect with people who are experts to say, listen, is this genuine? Can I say this on the radio, et cetera, et cetera? And sort of, you know, be able to do searches. Big fan of DuckDuckGo.
Please discuss that with us.
As a search engine. I like it. Again, because I spend so much time online. And it's not that I don't have paranoia about being tracked, but I like the idea that my search results are unfiltered. And I was doing a lecture for RSA, the security RSA people, and this guy was also doing a lecture before me. And I listened to his lecture. This was quite a while ago, and he said he got two friends in the US to do a Google search and send him the front page of the Google search. And he got them both to put the word Egypt into the search engine and just send him the front page. One of them was a travel junkie. The other one's a news junkie. And their search results was so distinctly different. The travel junkie got offers for Sharm el-Sheikh, flights, hotels, and this was his Google page. When he just typed in the word Egypt, that's it. And the other guy got everything about Tahrir Square, you know, the uprising, Arab Spring, all that stuff came out. And I just thought, that's not right. I know what Google's doing, And I can, you know, you can argue, you can have a completely different conversation about what their motives are. And I kind of genuinely believe that their motives are those of convenience, of this is what we know you like, so here's some more of it. But I want to choose that. I want to be in control of that. So DuckDuckGo, the reason I use them a lot is that you only get one advert, and their results are not based on previous searches or your location. So if you search for the one thing at home, and if I search for it, barring the advert that might be different, we'll get the same results.
Mm.
And I quite like that.
What's the internet like when you're using websites like that to search for stuff? Can you... I mean, are you just not a fan? Are you away from Google totally? Are you not aware of that?
No, I'll use Google. Sometimes if I feel that I'm not getting, maybe there's more to it, I'll do a Google search as well.
Mm.
But mostly I will use DuckDuckGo for all my searches. And I've noticed no difference. I'm not missing out on anything. I'm getting the same results, but I'm getting sort of a consistency of results not based on my previous searches or location. So they're unbiased results. And I also use, because I don't like tracking stuff, I use a browser called Brave browser, which I think it's gone onto the Chrome platform now, because
Chrome's got a multitude of things that you can access. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a plugin, because I use something called Badger, which kind of works out where cookies are, turns them all off.
Right.
And then if it's turns off, sometimes it can be a bit overzealous and, like, you know, you can't see an image, so you can go through and see all the different
areas. Brave is similar. Yeah. But I'll tell you what Brave browser, which I thought was magnificently brilliant of them. I think it was designed by someone who used to be at Mozilla.
Okay.
So what Brave browser does is it completely affords you no tracking at all. You can switch off all the sort of ads and all that kind of stuff really easily. They now offer a private window, which is effectively a Tor browser. So if you're into that sort of thing, that it gives you access to that.
The deep web.
Yeah. But what I liked, which they do, because actually there was a moral issue about using ad trackers, which is the websites that you go to don't make any money. So if there are websites that you're reliant on to get your information, not giving them any money by landing on their page and them being paid for the ad is not a great thing. So what Brave browser allows you to do is you can put some money on your browser. So you can put $10 on, and you can tell it, every time I land on these websites, pay them something.
That's cool. I like that.
So you can pay them 10 cents every time you land or something like that. So they still get some money from you landing on their web page, which I think is morally decent.
Yeah, it's an exchange, an information exchange. If, you know, if you're gaining some information, you know,
why should it
pay
be free?
What you can.
Yeah, and I set what I pay. And I also set which websites I want it to go to. And I'm on Brave and DuckDuckGo for that. And it as a journalist, it hasn't affected my. I don't feel like, oh, I'm not getting the right information.
Okay,
you know?
We'll pop links to those in the show description.
Yeah,
I think we'll definitely do that, and so you can check those out. Thank you so much for having a chat with us. I think we killed well more than an hour on today's show. Thank you so much. It's flown by. And where can we see you next? And obviously, you've got the radio show.
Well, the radio talk radio on Saturdays 4 till 7, and
the time as well. Great time,
4 till 7, and Sundays. A few Sundays I'm doing now 10 till 1. So. But you can catch me on talk radio. I've already started filming. I do a show with Gabby Roslin on Channel 5, which is called Shop Smart, Save Money. And it's a fun little show. I think it'll come back on in second week of April. We film live studio stuff up in Bradford. And it's all about saving money. So it's sort of exactly what it says on the tin. I've done some investigative films all about, on sort of really kind of common stuff like detergents and sun cream and school uniforms and chocolate Easter eggs and, you know, and just basically just giving people the truth behind those, how much they cost, are you getting value for money, where can you kind of save a little bit of money. So yeah, that's Shop Smart Save Money coming out in April. And you can also catch me in The Durrells, the last series of The Durrells. It's the last series on ITV, which I think again starts this April. It's going to be very sad, but it's lovely.
God, you know what? Some of my favourite books were My Family and Other Animals. And,
yeah, it's great, and it's great stories, and the TV show has been brilliant, and it's been such a joy to do for 4 years. But yeah, and this is the last series.
Oh, what's that like for you, that side of TV for you?
It's great. You know, I haven't been acting since I started doing The Real Hustle all of 13 years ago, and a friend of mine was directing this. It was in Greece. I'm a Greek speaker. They needed some Greek actors, and he said, look, would you like to do it? It's a small part, but you kind of get to come in and out. And it
go
was,
and see your relatives while you're not
yeah filming. Well, actually, not? Everyone's in Athens, and this film's in Corfu, but so I kind of go and put my feet up in Corfu. It's just an absolute joy, and it's so nice that it's so many people love it as a show. I think it's one of the most loved things I've ever done. It's absolutely brilliant. And so, yeah, there's that. And hopefully one more series with Marcus. We'll see. I'll definitely let you guys know, because you can help us out. Plug
if
it.
If he's not about, I know another Marcus.
Another Marcus.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. We'll put links to all your social media in the show description.
Thank you.
There's plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with myself and Al today. And don't forget, we've got a competition for the Division 2, which we've given away. howtokillanhour.com/win is where you need to go to if you want to get your hands on that. And we will speak to you on the next episode, obviously. Plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time
with
us.
Thank you.
Cheers.
You can vote for us in the Listener's Choice Awards at this year's British Podcast Awards 2019. If you'd like to vote for us, it only takes a minute of your time. Head to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. That's britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Type in How to Kill an Hour and then, yeah, you'll have voted for us. It only takes a minute of your time and we'd really appreciate it. We'll also put a link in the show's description. Thank you very much in advance. And hey, here's hoping we win.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.